I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Will Henschel. Will is an entrepreneur, an inventor holding 6 patents, and a platinum record-selling musician and composer. Will founded the British pop soul band London Beat and had 2 Billboard number 1 hit records, then founded Rocket Network, which is a Paul Allen Cisco-funded San Francisco company, and he created the professional audio media transfer system DigiDelivery, which he sold to Avid. Today, Will's current focus is www.focusatwill.com, an online cognitive performance platform that delivers scientifically developed music and sound that helps reduce distractions when working, studying, and reading. Will, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Hey, that was quite an intro, David. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's your story. It's not mine.
Yeah, when you look at it like that in sort of out of context, you go, wow, yeah, that all happened. That's true.
That's good. It's good it all happened. So tell our audience a little bit more about what's behind that background. You've had some really interesting different segments to your professional life. And yeah. I wonder if you could, you know, talk a little bit about it and also talk about why things have played out the way they've played out for you.
Yeah, I'm a I'm equally left brain and right brain person. So I'm equally artistically driven and sort of technical process driven. And it's been an equal part blessing and equal part curse in my life, really. You know, the two things where, yes, I've had notable success as a songwriter and as a performer and a composer, and I've had notable success as a technology inventor and entrepreneur. It so happens, actually, that the process is very similar of sort of inventing something here's a new widget, here's a better way of doing something, you get the inspiration, and then, you know, it's 2% inspiration and 98% perspiration. And it's exactly the same in the music business. So you write a song and you get the aha moment. I've been thinking about you. I've been thinking about you. You probably remember that. That was one of the number one records that I wrote for the mm-hmm. band London Beat. I was in the band too. And then it's 98% perspiration. I mean, oh my goodness. Running a band is a very similar, it's a startup. You know, the basis of you get some intellectual property, and then you get someone to give you some angel funding, and then you make the first demo of the thing, and then you check it out on a few audiences. In a band, you go out and play live a while and just see what happens. And then getting feedback from that, you know, you go, oh yeah, these are the likely hits, and then you go in and then you record the potential hits, and then you get on the how are we going to market this thing, and you're out, you know, you're out on stage playing it and trying to get it on the radio. Well, the high-tech business is almost exactly the same. You know, you get the inspiration, and then you get some angel money. You make the initial minimum viable product based on getting feedback from people, right? And then you get, right. Once you've figured out, oh, we have a thing here. There is a there is what they say in Silicon Valley. And then you figure out how to get funding to market the thing. And for it to become something that's part of everybody's life. So even though I've had these two worlds, they're actually very similar in practice. The process is very similar from one thing to the other.
So talk to me a little bit about this balance that's needed between inspiration and perspiration. If the inspiration is really only 2%, and if you are a creative thinker, how do you find the energy or the focus or whatever it takes for the 98% that's the perspiration?
Well, a lot of it is down to not being too precious about your own ideas. You know, as a creative person, you're very excited always about the last thing you did. You know, this is my new song, it's the best thing I ever did. Here, this is my new idea, it's the best thing I've ever got. Well, I've been doing this for 30 years now, and one of the things I've learned to do is not to believe my own publicity. that's the big takeaway. Don't believe your own publicity. So your latest idea is just your latest idea. And what you have to do is to understand that not all your ideas are equal. Even the best artists or best tech inventors in the world, look at Apple, you know, with Steve Jobs' time at Apple, you know, he had something. Newton was a strange idea, somewhat ahead of its time, but even so, it's like, why would someone want to do that? So it's the same as with songwriters. You know, I've worked with some really fabulous songwriters over the years, like Daryl Hall, for instance, from Hall & Oates. And one of the things that he taught me is you've just got to get everything out. You've got this sort of the creative process is like a faucet, and you turn it on and you've got to clear the drain. There's going to be some dirty water in there. Just let everything come out and then assess the good ideas. So to answer your question, 2% or 98%. Once you've established that these ideas, these concepts are the ones you want to work at, they are actually, it's not an equal, you know, it's not 2% versus 98%. They are the critical 2%. The 98% is really about time and execution. Because the ideas are ideas. Ideas are schmideas, right? It's, you know, everybody's got an idea. Everybody's got an opinion. But it's actually executing on the good idea, both in the music business as a performer and as a songwriter, and in the tech business. And it's incredibly, incredibly difficult to effectively execute an idea. Incredibly difficult. There's so much inertia, and there's so much, it's so difficult to get momentum on something. Even if it's the right idea at the right time, you've got to have the right other right things with you. There's a really awesome metaphor. I was managed when I was an artist in the band London Beat by a company in London called Hyperkinetics. Sandra Turnbull was my manager, and she told me, she managed Eurythmics, the band Eurythmics, as well as me and London Beat. And she told me, here, to have a hit record, think of it like this. Here's a boat. It's a really nice boat, but it has got 40 or 50 holes in it. And you've got to plug up every single one of those holes in the right time for it to float. And what I mean by that is, just talking about the music business for a minute, because it's something that I think most people understand. So you've got to write a hit song, and then you've got to find the right producer in the right studio to get the right mix, to get the vocalist to sing it in the right key so that people can sing along with it while they're working in the factories, or or people are just like the record when you're at a gig. If it's in the wrong key, people can't sing along with it. So you've got to get the product right. But then you've got to make sure that the record is released to radio at the same time that there's not another band with a very similar sound to your record in the same week. So the timing to radio is critical. And then you've got to make sure that somehow the sentiment of the song fits the where people's mindset, there's a sort of a general mindset. So there are about 40 different holes. And then you've got to do a tour to make sure you're playing in the right town so that the album is in the record stores. So there's all of these holes you've got to plug to make something successful. And yeah, with London Beat, you know, back in the early 90s, we had the hits, and we were able to do that. The high-tech business is exactly the same. We see this again and again. You've got to have the right product, but then you've got to make sure that it works on the right technology. You know, does it work on the new version of, you know, the iOS 8's just come out. Does that break everything? Well, guess what? The 15% of our users who are iPhone users happen to be guys like you. The guys that I'm presuming, are you an iPhone user?
I am.
There you go. So the movers and shakers, the opinion makers in the high-tech business are nearly all Apple users. So even though it's only 15% of our user base, it is the most important 15%. So that's a really good example of, we have to devote much more than 15% of our resources into this platform because, you know, people like you, David, are iPhone users, and our app has to work for you guys.
Interesting. So, Will, how do you, since execution is such a challenge, what are some of the techniques that you have found that are really helpful to create successful implementation?
The key is who you hire. There's two ways of doing this. You can either hire a bunch of inexperienced people and sort of crowdsource it by just like jamming everybody together and getting the best ideas. And then, you know, there are a lot of tools that are available now that were not available even 5 years ago, technically. There's a lot of open source stuff available. Or you can be very selective, which is what I like to do, and that is hire people who are more experienced but are not closed-minded. Sometimes when you hire people who are more experienced, they get used to doing something in a very particular way. And we have found that, you know, my personal secret to success, I think a lot of it has been finding out what I'm not good at. It's not what you are good at, it's what you're not good at. And having people on the team who are aware of the same things. It's rare that you actually get real generalists. You know, you might find someone who's really good at a very key aspect of digital marketing, but if they're not experienced or they've just not had, you know, training in another area, it's really important that you know that so that you can, you know, don't make assumptions about what people can and can't do.
How do you tell how open-minded somebody is, particularly somebody who's experienced?
I tend to do it now by a number of things. It's a combination of asking people some key questions and just getting a read on them. When you know, there are ways that you, as you get a little older, you just have this human thing. You can go, I've asked somebody a question that they're uncomfortable with, or I think someone's kind of bullshitting me around this thing. And it's checking out references. It's asking someone if you're hiring a developer, one of the best things you can do is actually, if they're available, to have them just do a contract job for you. You know, I've got a very specific widget that I need making. You apparently can do this widget. Would you do this widget under a contract? We'll pay you a going contractor rate to do this. I will see whether you can do this or not. You're not doing this as an audition for the part here. I need this doing, can you do it? And that's a really great way of figuring out whether someone's capable or not.
And how do you tell what you yourself are not good at?
I have a history of, look behind me, there's a bunch of train wrecks, David. Really. I have just learned to be humble and just know that the stuff I'm good at, I'm good at, and the stuff I'm not good at, I'm really not good at. Here's a for instance. So in my life, I've been both a musician composer. I signed to MCA Records for 8 years, and the band London Beat was the best known project that I did. And then I've been the CEO and entrepreneur of three different startups. But at one point, I got sick of both of these worlds and decided I wanted to be a photographer, a professional photographer. Now, I got a pretty good eye, and I've got friends who are photographers who are saying to me, listen, you're good enough, you should be able to do this. So I thought, okay. This was about 10 years ago. I was like, you know what? I'm going to be a professional photographer. So I went off and did it. I interned with one of the best commercial photographers in LA, and I got to know people in the professional photography world, and mentors, and put together a photography business. And yeah, I'm a pretty decent photographer. Notice what I said, pretty decent. So where I got to is that I'm probably in the top 5% of photographers. But that means that if you look at the way that people get paid in that business, the top 2% make most of the money and everyone else is scrabbling. So I was still 3% down from there. And eventually I just found out that I'm pretty good at this. I'm pretty decent at it, but I don't have that absolute drive and that brilliance to be like, oh my God, this is. So I'd see the top guys work and I'd be like, oh, I'm not that good. And so I humbly, I shoot for fun now, and I still got all the gear, but I don't do that anymore. And I found that I'm not good at everything that I think I am at.
So. It's a really interesting reflection. Yeah. It's fascinating that you had the inner strength to try to do something that was somewhat new professionally after the successes you had, and I'm sure it incurred some risks and perhaps was a little daunting, but then to get to the point where you're So near the top of the field in terms of your technical capability, but to recognize that it's not really where you want to be, and to move on.
Yeah, I went from being the CEO of a high tech business, 70 employees, Paul Allen, Cisco funded, to selling that particular company, Rocket Network, to Avid, which are the guys that make the video editing equipment, the standard sort of package that most people edit video and audio with, Pro Tools. To literally sweeping the floor as an intern, as an unpaid intern, at a successful photo studio in LA, and it was the most humbling thing I ever did. It really was.
I can only imagine.
It was really good for me. Brought me down a notch, I tell you straight.
So let's shift. Actually, let's talk a little bit about what you're working on now, because I've done a little research on your background and what you're the waters that you're charting now seem to be really exciting and perhaps quite groundbreaking.
Well, thank you. My current focus is Focus at Will. And Focus at Will is a cognitive performance platform. Let's talk about some plain English here. What is it?
Well, what does that mean?
Cognitive performance means doing stuff better with your brain. The basis of the story is this, that we live in a world of ever-increasing distractions. Really, we do. While I was talking to you just then, I had two voicemails came in and three Twitter things, and all this stuff is happening on the phone, and I'm trying to ignore it while I'm talking to you, right? So this is only going to get more and more distracting. Combine the fact that we have these personal devices that require our attention. Combine the fact that increasingly offices are open plan. Something I read the other day said that 75% of millennials work in open plan offices. If you're in an open plan office, the only thing you can do to try and block out the noise is listen to music or put headphones on. Here's the thing. If you listen to music that you like, in other words, anything, that's the radio or iTunes or Pandora or Spotify, the music that you like that moves you in some way is designed to engage you. Even if it's like trance or the most distracting music of all is that we found in our lab is hip hop, because it's got the groove, it makes you move, it does the drop, it brings in the dopamine, the lyrics are funny or profane or sexy, whatever they are, it's designed to grab you. And so we found that there's this huge problem of people needing to kind of block out distractions, instinctively wanting to listen to music, but almost none of the music that's available actually helps you. It's actually distracting you. So as a musician and as a composer, I've learned a lot about how to make music that goes, I've been thinking about you, I've been thinking about you, right? This is designed to get in your brain and be a pop song that you can't forget. And, and I started reverse engineering this. What can we do? Is there a way to create a music channel? Is the music that we can design that will not distract you, that will help the cognitive process? And the answer is yes, there is. And the music that works best for that, the quick takeaway is, it's music that has no vocals in it, first of all, not even in another language, so no vocals. Music that has instruments that sound like the human voice will be distracting. So think about the brain in two ways for a minute. You've got your conscious mind, which is me talking to you now, okay, David, and so I'm talking to you, and in the background, as I'm talking to you, in my mind, and yours too, of course, you've got your non-conscious mind. And your non-conscious mind is looking out for your safety. So right now, I'm in San Francisco, and I can see, I'm looking out the window, and there's someone with a dog walking by, and then, you know, so my non-conscious mind is noticing all this stuff, but I'm concentrating on a conversation with you. Your non-conscious mind, though, is it's linked to your fight or flight response. I'm kind of simplifying the science a little bit around this, and my science team will be looking at me daggers through the window if they were listening to this. But you could say that your non-conscious mind is the part of the brain that's looking out for your safety, so that it allows the you, which is me talking to you now, to concentrate on this conversation. If you smell smoke right now, or if you hear a scream right now, you will not be able to have this conversation with me. You'll be like, hang on a minute, I've got to see what's going on. That reflex is part of the internal mechanism that distracts us. And it is part of the way that we are able to listen to white noise, or you know, some people like to sleep with white noise. You instinctively like to listen to music while you're working to kind of soothe that response. And there's some, just to quickly talk to you about the timing of it, most people can work for about 20 minutes in a solid 20-minute sort of set before something inside them makes them look around or stray thoughts start coming in. You know, the Pomodoro technique is 20 to 25 minutes, if you've not seen that, it's very interesting. TED Talks, you know, I did a TEDx talk myself last year. They're always 18 minutes. We have this window of about 18 to 20 minutes when we can concentrate. And what's happening for most people after that, something called habituation kicks in. And it's this mechanism in the brain that goes, okay, you've been sitting here long enough, you just need to double check there's not a bear behind you. Well, of course there are no bears behind you, hopefully.
Hopefully.
While you're working, right? But what happens is, the mechanism that distracts you at that point is an internal mechanism. And we have found by using specific kinds of music in very specific sequences, music and sound actually, of course, focus at will has audio channels, soundscapes as well as music works better for some people. We found that we're able to manage this mechanism, which is the fight or flight mechanism, which is the distraction mechanism in the brain. And this is the theory behind why focus at will works. And about 50% of our users can increase their continuous focus time from 20 minutes up to 1 hour. So most people, 50% of the users on Focus at Will, can concentrate for a solid 1 hour without having to look around. And another 20% of our users can go an hour and a half, 90 minutes. And I think the number, I don't know if my numbers are right on this, but another percentage, maybe 10 or 15%, can do 2 hours. So by listening to this service while you're trying to work, you can like get yourself on rails and deal with getting that report out, getting the spreadsheet done, hitting that piece of code, designing this web page.
Fascinating. Will, what is it about audio that might be different from other forms of human interaction?
Well, your sound environment is actually, you don't have ear lids, for instance. Your earring is always on. And the part of the brain that is monitoring your safety is larger for your sound. It's more important to your brain, your sound, than it is your vision. And again, I'm kind of simplifying a lot of science around this, but the way to think of it is that we use our ears to look after, evolutionarily, we use our ears more than our eyes to check for things behind us. And so there is and this works so well for us because we are not working with our ears unless you're a sound engineer. You know, while you are sitting using your eyes and your cognitive part of your mind, if you're learning and you're studying for an exam or you're working on designing a document or creating a project, your ears are what are sort of looking out for your safety behind you. And that is really the essence of how and why this system works.
Fascinating. So what are some of your plans around this concept that you're working on?
Well, my own sort of life path is that I want to work on things that matter. I want to make the world a really a better place. I want to build tools and technology that help. I'm not interested in computer game widgets or video games or time-wasting things. The reason why I started Focus at Will is I realized when I was doing a consulting project, and I just realized that I was sitting there for 10 hours in someone's office, and you know, I could have done what I could have done in 5 hours and then got my 5 hours back hanging out with my dog and my kid on the beach. The one thing we don't get back is time. It's our precious resource. You never see your kid age 6 and a half again. Now he's going to be 6 and a half in one day. And so I just realized how much of what we do is it's just time wasting. If you could get your time back so that you can get things done in your workday and be much more efficient. It depends. If you're working for yourself, you might want to, you know, be more efficient so you can earn twice as much money. Or you may be like me, I value my time with my family and my kid and my dog. And that's what really drove me. Is there a way to be able to be more productive and more efficient with my time so I'm not wasting my time? So Focus at Will is aimed for people who are working and studying. You know, studying, it's expensive. You know, college education, you're spending increasing a lot of money at doing that. And is there a way to be able to do it more efficiently? The answer is yes. The system Focus at Will works, by the way, for about 2 people out of 3 statistically. If anybody listening to this, check it out, focusatwill.com. There's a free 30-day trial. You don't need to put a credit card in. Just check it out and see if it works for you. Lots of different channels on the system, ranging from classical to ambient to up-tempo, which is sort of trans-electronica, through to some very specific channels that are designed to work for people with ADHD. It's one of those things that if it works for you, you'll know straight away. If it doesn't work for you, you'll be like, this is the most stupid thing I ever heard. Our customer feedback mails are fantastic. They're either, this is amazing, it changed my life, thank you so much, or, you guys, this is the most stupid thing I ever heard, what do you think this is? Which is not that many people, I gotta say, thank goodness.
That's really interesting. It sounds like a really remarkable project.
It's very exciting. I have mails on a regular basis. Our Twitter feed, if anybody's interested, look at @FocusAtWill. It's the most active feed, and you can see exactly what people are saying. I literally tear up, when I read what people are saying about how I've had ADD all my life, I don't want to take meds for that. Your system has allowed me to actually deliver an ACE paper. And one guy wrote recently, he's a rocket scientist working here in California, and he wrote and he said he had to take some work home with him the other day, and he forgot to feed his kids because it was 6:30 and he was on rails knocking out a project with folks at Will in the background.
Fascinating. Will, who are some of the people who have been your influencers and have helped you smash the plateau in your own career?
Well, it's not really people. The biggest mover in my own career has been Singularity University. Singularity is a newish private university here in California. It's in Moffett Field, which is the NASA campus. And it started by Peter Diamantis and Ray Kurzweil. And it's a university that has a graduate studies program and a number of executive programs that anybody can go to. And it's based on the idea that exponential growth in any industry has profound implications that we cannot understand as human beings. Just the quick takeaway is if you take 30 steps from where you're standing now, you know, you'll be at the end of the hallway. And if I take 30 steps from where I am now, I would be on the edge of the I would be on the edge of this little dock, and I'd be in the water because I'm right on the edge of the bay here in San Francisco. But if you take 30 exponential steps where each one is bigger than the last one, I think 30 exponential steps gets us to Italy from California. 32 gets us all the way around the world and back again. 32 gets us to the, you know, 33 is to the moon. You can see that this kind of enormous hockey stick kicks in of exponential change, and the staff and the faculty at Singularity University have been incredibly important in having me think about the implications. I'd really like to. I've got a what they call a BHAG there, which is a big, hairy, audacious goal, and mine is to positively impact the lives of 1 billion people in the next 10 years, if I can do that. Shout out from someone there, Salim Ismail, who's the global ambassador. He's just written a really awesome book, which is called Exponential Organizations, Exponential Orgs. And it's an incredibly intriguing book about the way you can leverage exponential growth in completely new ways.
Yeah, so Salim sounds fascinating, and he is an upcoming guest on Smashing the Plateau.
Great. Well, tell him hello from me. He's also an investor and an advisor in Focus at Will, and it was his idea to actually call the company Focus at Will. I was going to call it something boring like musicforworkandstudy.com.
No, I love Focus at Will. It's very clever.
Yeah. Yeah.
So with that in mind, Will, I know you mentioned some links earlier. Can you tell listeners again how they can learn more about you?
Sure. Well, the simple thing is to go to focusatwill.com, and that's focusatwill.com. That's the, you can check out the service. As I said, there's a no credit card required. Just sign up and just give your credit, your email, and you'll be in and working right away. The Twitter feed, which is at Focus at Will, is very, very active and a really great way to reach out and say hello. And we have all the usual Facebook stuff. I have a very active Facebook page, which is Will Henschel, W-I-L-L Henschel. And I post, I'm really interested in this delta of neuroscience, cognitive performance, sort of productivity enhancement, and audio and music. So music for a sort of a new and notable use.
Sounds great. So Will, we're running out of time, so we could keep this conversation going on a lot longer. There's so much to talk about.
Yeah, thank you.
But I wanted to just thank you for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. It's really been great to have you on, talk about the fascinating work that you've been doing, and hear more about your world. So thank you for taking the time. My guest today has been musician, writer, inventor, and photographer, Will Henschel. Thank you again, Will, for joining us.
It's a real pleasure. I'm less of a photographer and more of an inventor and a musician.
Duly noted. Thanks again, Will.
All right. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.